First, I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I am a lawyer currently. I was a teacher before this. I taught high school for a number of years and then went through a career change about the same time that I decided to do a search. A lot of stuff was going on in my life at the same time. But now I'm an adoptee, and as right in the middle of law school, I decided I wanted to do a search and find out about my birth mother. It also just coincidentally happened around my 30th birthday. I think that was kind of a turning point in my life as well. So a lot of upheaval was happening at the same time. Anyway, I was practicing law in Des Moines, and I'm moving up to Minneapolis, Minnesota shortly to start practicing there. I'm interested in knowing how many of the, if you feel comfortable exposing yourselves, I would like to know kind of what different people's perspective is here in this group. So if I could start out by asking how many people here are adoptees. If you'd raise your hand, I'd be interested to know. Just one? I'm happy to have company. I'm really glad you're here. Are there any birth parents? And by birth parents, I mean people who have surrendered children for adoption. How about adoptive parents? Okay. And how many people are thinking about adopting and are here thinking about adopting?
Never thought that maybe.
Yesterday I was having lunch with some people, and someone asked me, "Heidi, what are you doing here in the village?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to be leading some discussions on adoption issues." And this person said, "Oh, I'm adopted. What's the issue?" I loved it. That was great. So that's kind of the direction that I want to start out with today is, what is the issue? You know, really, what is going on here? And I think the answer to that question in brief is access to information as an adoptee. The way I'm going to structure the sessions is I want to point out and I want to get people thinking about the legal issues involved in adoption and also the interpersonal issues involved in adoption. I actually got most interested in adoption, I think, from a legal standpoint because I was in law school at the time and I was thinking about things very legally and I didn't want to confront kind of what was going on inside. So I'm going to start out right now by talking a little bit about what the legal aspects are. But first, there are a couple of books that I would like to recommend. One, I have asked the bookstore to order, and it is there. It's called The Adoption Triangle. This is a wonderful book for anyone interested in adoption issues at all. This group of social workers and doctors were among the pioneers in doing research on adoption issues from kind of a psychological perspective. And they're the ones that coined the phrase adoption triangle, thinking of adoptees, birth parents, and adoptive parents as the three parts of the triangle. I will use that because I'm conducting three different sessions, but I think adoption has much broader impact than just breaking it down into three different sections of these people have this perspective and that person has that perspective. But adoption affects people all the way across the board. Probably you know people who are adopted. You might be teachers who are involved with children who are adopted. And so I don't think it's easily broken down. But if you want more information on adoption generally, The Adoption Triangle is great. And this book includes a lot of letters that these people accumulated over the years from adoptees and birth parents and adoptive parents, and so there are a lot of personal stories in here. So I think this is a wonderful book in that way. This book I did not ask the bookstore to order, but if you're interested, I can give you more information about it. It's written by Betty Jean Lifton, called Lost and Found. She is an adoptee, and she's a very gifted writer. She actually authors children's books, I think is kind of her perspective. She has written another autobiography called Twice Born is her personal autobiography. And this book on Lost and Found followed her autobiography, and I think she writes very feelingly from the perspective of an adoptee, but she also talks a lot about, some of the titles in this book are just wonderful, like Birth Mothers, Are They Baby Machines? And the one on adoptive parents is really wonderful. Are They Babysitters? So she does try to focus on some of those issues as well, but mostly she is writing from the perspective of an adoptee, and I think speaks beautifully about that. A huge section of this book has to do with searching, the decision to search and what happens after a reunion. So if you're interested in that aspect of adoption, I recommend this book, because she's done a lot of interviews with adoptees about their reunions. The last thing that is in the bookstore is an article that I have written focusing particularly on the legal aspects of adoption, and it's rather technical, and I guess I really wouldn't recommend it unless you're fascinated by the legal aspects of adoption. Although when I wrote this article, I did something kind of daring for a law student, and I incorporated parts of my own story, my own search story, in here. So there is a personal aspect to it as well. But basically, if you want a summary of adoption laws in various states, that kind of thing is in here. Also, I might add, adoption laws are changing all the time because this is a really fluctuating area, I'm happy to say. So some of the legal information in here is even outdated. But I thought I would point out that I brought copies of it along if you're interested in more on the legal issues. The sessions, I'm going to break them down into three sections. Today I want to focus on adoptees' perspective and the whole question of identity. I believe my next session is on Wednesday, and in that one I want to look at birth parents, particularly birth mothers' perspective. And when I do that session, I want to focus on search process and reunions. So if you're interested in that, that's something that's coming up. And the last section, I'm focusing on adoptive families' perspectives, and one of the things I want to talk about there is communication issues. How do adoptive parents talk to adopted children? So those are the three different areas. Obviously, I don't want you to necessarily feel you have to attend all of these in a row, and if you have questions as we're going through and it's not exactly on the topic, or you have a birth mother question, please ask, and we'll deal with that here. But I wanted to give you kind of an overall perspective of the way I had broken it down so you know what's happening. So what's the issue? It's about access to information, and the way adoption happens is that typically there is a child who is surrendered, or in the terms of Swarovski, a child who is relinquished is kind of the technical term for that, by a birth mother. The laws are still not very, they don't pay much attention to birth fathers. And so if I forget to say birth father, I'm not really trying to exclude them. It's just that laws don't really recognize birth fathers unless there's been some sort of paternity suit filed. So generally the father does not have any role in signing off on the adoption papers. But the birth mother will sign off on a paper surrendering the child. At the time that happens, the child is generally turned over to an agency or to a lawyer if it's through a private adoption, if it's being done through a lawyer directly, and the child will then be placed in a home. After the placement is successful, a legal adoption takes place in which the parents, and some of you here probably did this, actually go to court and stand before a magistrate, and it's made official. That the child becomes the child of the adoptive parents. And at that point, the child's records are sealed. They're really put tape around them, and they're put into generally state record files or into county files. It depends on the state. And a new birth certificate is issued. And the birth certificate will have the name of the adoptive parents and really won't have much else in terms of information on it. The original birth certificate is in that file that is sealed. So at that point, everything is anonymous, and the child has taken the name of the family that he or she has been adopted into. Now, in order to obtain any kind of information about your past as an adoptee, or if you're a birth mother or birth father who wants to try to get information about your child, you have to go through legal channels to do that. And there are basically four different ways to go about doing that. In some states, I think there maybe are four at this point, records are basically open, and at any time a member of the adoption triangle wants to get in there and get access to the record, all they have to do is contact the appropriate vital information records agency, and the records will be open to that, to the person who makes the request. Now, it's not open to strangers as far as I know, but if you can say I'm an adoptee and I'd like to have the records, they will be open to you.
At any age? What age?
It depends upon the state. I think it's 18 to 21. It's age of majority. Yeah.
How long have they sealed the records like that? In other words, if a person was 40 years old, their records are available sealed just like you're talking about.
Right. And now that's a good question too, because I'm thinking that maybe in some states they're maybe not even sealing the records. Kansas is one state that has had open adoption records since 1951. So it occurs to me that maybe children born after 1951, their records were not sealed. I'm not really certain about that. But
in terms of access though, it's 18 or 21 for the adoptee.
For the adoptee.
What about the birth parents?
I think that they have, it also is dependent on the child's age, right? So the child has to be of the age of majority. And sometimes it varies according to adoptive families too. They may be able to get information about the birth parents before the child is 18. But it really depends. You'd have to check on the individual state law to find out about that. Yeah.
I always seem to jump ahead too, so
you
can jump ahead.
It's fine.
If I were an adopted child and I'm at this stage in life, would like to find out about my birth parents, is there any need for the adopted parents to know about that?
No. No, it's not. That's not at all a requirement, and I'll get to that next. After you have the number one is open records policy. It's only, as I said, two to four states, I think, have utterly open record policies. Kind of the next step along that continuum is something called search and consent procedure. And I think maybe 10, 11, 12 states in the United States have a search and consent procedure. And Minnesota has a search and consent procedure, and that's what I went through. The way the search and consent procedure works is that the adoptee, upon reaching the age of majority, can contact the agency that he or she was placed through. So I went through the agency that I knew that I had been placed through, and they will then contact the birth parent or the birth mother and find out if she's willing to maintain contact or to assume some sort of contact. If the birth parent says no, that's it. The record is closed. If the birth parent said yes, fortunately mine did, then contact is initiated through the agency, but still no name is released. So my birth mother and I corresponded to each other for about 8 months through the agency, and only our names were deleted, and that kind of thing was removed from the record by the agency. In other words, I got letters from her retyped on agency stationery with place names removed and college names, and any kind of identifying information was removed. And then after 8 months of correspondence, she said, you can have my name now, and then we started talking directly. My birth father, on the other hand, did not want to be contacted, and so I was not able to get in touch with him, although subsequently I have been able to. So that's the next kind of step on the continuum. The next one is a registry system. And a number of states are thinking about adopting, those that have absolutely closed records are thinking about taking kind of the next step along, which is a registry system. In a registry, anyone who's interested in being contacted or having contact sends their name to a central agency set up by the state, and that way they can be connected with each other. Unfortunately, registries are rarely successful because they're not widely publicized or people don't know, so they typically don't work, but that's a number of states are using that as an option. And there is a national registry as well. If any of you would like to know the address of that, I can give it to you.
I'm not clear on that. On a registry system, do both sides have to send their name in, and that's
yes.
the only way a contact
that's
would be
right.
made?
That's right. Yeah. So you just send in your name, and you have to keep updating it. Obviously, every time you move, you'd have to send your name into the registry. The last, and most states have this system, is an absolutely sealed record. And the only way that an adoptee can get information when the record is absolutely sealed is to petition a court to have the record unsealed. And there are many, many interesting court cases, which I outline in laborious detail in my article, having to do with adoptees petitioning courts to get access to their records. And the courts are very, very protective of keeping those records sealed. And generally, the standard is called the good cause standard. You have to have good cause to have your records opened. And you may think just in your own mind, what constitutes good cause? I think the most egregious example of something that is not good cause was a young man who was dying of leukemia and had been told that if he had a bone marrow transplant, he might have some success of survival. So he petitioned New York State court to have his records open so he could find some blood relation who might be willing to have a bone marrow transplant, and the judge decided that that was not good cause. I think that's the most extreme example. But you would think in a life or death situation it might be open. That is not necessarily the case. And certainly just wanting to know is not good cause in those states. So those are kind of the legal perspectives on that. And I'm going to turn to the next section, which is the question of who am I, or identity as an adoptee. And this is the point when I'd like you to break up into groups of two or three, if you would. And I have a couple of questions that I would like you to think about and talk to one another about for a couple of minutes. And then I'm going to ask you to come back, and I'd like to get some feedback from you about what you talked about. First of all, when you're talking with people, would you tell them what brought you here, what your interest in adoption is, and what your connection is to the adoption question? And the question I'd like you to think about and discuss with one another is, who do you identify most with in your family and why? And if you could, you know, even come up with maybe a story about how you've connected with someone in your family or who you identify with. I'm just going to leave it open, but I'd just like to have you take a couple of minutes to talk about that in groups of two or three.
Hi.
I want to hear what you have to say.
We didn't get to say it.
Are there some things that people feel like they want to share about things that they identify with and why? Let me start with this. How many of you mentioned things that had to do with appearance? You know, people that you looked like?
You're doing the second question?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No?
Didn't get to that.
No.
Person. Oh, yes. Yeah. I could say that. I mean, when I was younger and I graduated from high school, there was a picture of me in my robe. And my father looked at that picture and said, Merle, that was my mother. I didn't know you tried on her robe. And I visit older people, and the older people in the family always thought that I was my mother. And I'd just sit there and talk to her, because you look so much alike. You know.
I think this is always a fun question for me to ask, because I think people who aren't adopted don't think about this. You know, it doesn't surprise me a bit, in fact, that no one here really thought about who they looked like. But I think if we had more adult adoptees in this room, you might find that more of them mention this as a characteristic.
The adoptees would be thinking about who they look like in their adopted family. Who they might look like in their birth, how their birth parents would look.
They'd be a lot more thinking
of physicalness.
Yes, of the physicality thing. Okay, for those of you who did get to talking about things that you identify with, what were those other characteristics or things?
Personality.
Okay. And can you be a little bit more specific about that? What personality?
I mentioned that I probably identify, I am like my father is what I would say.
Uh-huh.
Because of the way I approach life. I mean, it's the way I will analyze first before action. Efficiency is important. All these little things, you know, and I see that in my father.
I identified for a long time with my grandmother, who was a pioneer, and I sensed that part of myself. And so I think that her story gets her life journey. I identified a lot with the life journey.
Oh, mm-hmm. In the group that I talked with, someone mentioned, I'm going to put like talents or skills or interests. Did any of you talk about that as a connection or something that you related to somebody about? Was there anything else? Dan?
Mine are sort of a variety of a lot of those, and it's growing older. As I get older, I realize how much I'm like my dad in a lot of ways. Things I would never guess growing up. It's like body language. And I catch myself doing things that my dad has done for years. Mm-hmm. It's the way my voice sounds, and people comment on that.
Oh, yeah.
It's the way we walk. it's also things, the ways we think. We both love to read books and talk about it. There's a lot of things that as I'm getting older, I really relate to my dad that I wouldn't have as an adolescent or as a kid.
Yeah, any other stories or recollections? Another adoptee that I've talked to mentioned similar experiences caused her to relate more closely to members of her family. And one of her similar experiences, in fact, was getting pregnant out of wedlock and having to make the decision about what to do about that. That made her connect with actually a sister in her family who had been through that similar experience. So, okay, these are, I was just wondering if there were some other ideas, because these seem to be kind of the general themes that come through. In terms of the question, who am I? I think there are basically three kind of expressions that come up for adoptees. And number one is, I am special. And I don't know how many of you as adoptive parents have tried to convey this idea about an adoptive child being special. But for a long time in social service agencies, they really emphasized that one way to bond with the child or to make the child feel as though they were a member of the family was to treat them as a chosen child, someone who was especially taken in to the family. And I remember this personally in my family.
Are you saying that's positive? Or?
It has both, you know, it cuts both ways.
Oh, okay.
You know, all these things cut cut both ways. But I think during the 50s and the 60s, that was really the perspective that social workers took in the way adoptive parents were educated.
We were 1963.
She's special. She's a chosen child. And I remember my adoptive parents talking a lot about how I had been specially selected to be in their family, you know, and they emphasized that my birth parents' educational background matched theirs, and that physically that the match was there, and it was fascinating that that's the way that they approached it. And a lot of adopted children, I think, come into life, especially those who are closer to my age, thinking, you know, it's kind of like, well, yeah, I am special. I mean, there's kind of an aura about that. Maybe a little bit of, I don't know. Maybe I'm a little bit better than some other people because I'm special. But obviously, there is the flip side of that too. And as much as a child recognizes that they may be chosen, the other side is that, well, somewhere along the line, someone rejected me. I wasn't chosen by somebody else. And that's the abandoned. I am the abandoned child. And that's not very often, I think, articulated, especially by really young children. It's kind of scary to articulate that. But those who do psychological studies of adoptees say that that's a big part of the chosen child thing. It's the flip side of it. I was chosen by one, but I was rejected by another. I was really moved the other night at a Vesper service where the theme was talking about being kicked out of heaven, that heaven is a place that we weren't kicked out. And I don't remember what night that was. Maybe some of you were here then. I think it was maybe Saturday. And I thought about the fact that being kicked out or being rejected is a big part of I think, all of us, you know, the fear of being rejected. But for an adoptee, I think it's there especially because somewhere along the line there was a rejection, whether it's talked about or not. One of my favorite stories as a child was Hansel and Gretel, and the story about the children who were sent away by the evil stepmother. And I don't know, I never could understand why that stepfather didn't put his, or why the father didn't put his foot down, but he didn't. And the evil stepmother sent those kids out into the woods, and Hansel and Gretel got along just fine. And I think that for a lot of adoptees, Hansel and Gretel is a story that they can relate to. Oh, the other thing about the chosen child, and Betty Lipton talks about this in her book, Lost and Found, and when she mentioned it, it brought up all kinds of memories for me about the way I pictured an adoption agency when I was a child. And I thought the adoption agency was like a huge supermarket with babies on the shelves. And when I told my parents about this years later, well, you know, they picked me off the shelf. You know, they had the brunette babies with the good education over here, and I got, you know, selected from that. My mother was just horrified to think that that's how I'd grown up thinking about it. But it's such a hard concept for children to figure out about where they came from. And it just amused me that Betty Lipton mentioned that as well, that a lot of adoptees think that they were taken out of the baby supermarket or someplace like that, and that's how they were matched up. So one aspect of being adopted is the I am special aspect of it, and I know I have that. I have that too. I have always felt like a pretty special kid. Yeah.
I'm just as interested. You talk about growing up with this. So you apparently were told from a very young age that
yes.
you were adopted
mm-hmm.
because there's a lot. I know. I shouldn't say that I know of, but I mean, I understand. But there are a lot that used to at least not be told that it was a secret.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just kind of interested in that, knowing that all along, what, you know, how you felt about that as a young child particularly.
Well, I think again, it was the policy for people who were adopting children during, I think maybe this is since the 1950s. That parents were really encouraged to tell their children as soon as possible, and I don't in fact remember being told. So it was just part of my upbringing. I mean, it was obviously related to me so much along the way that it wasn't a big deal. And you know, the thought about that is changing. Actually, I'm kind of glad that you mentioned that. There are now a number of psychologists and social workers who are saying they think adopted children shouldn't ever be told, and which is kind of going back to the old, I mean, it's like pre-night, that you don't tell the child because it's such, there's such psychological damage. But that kind of viewpoint is coming back in again, because it's not clear that it's that it's easy for children to figure it out because of like the supermarket syndrome and this stuff. I mean, it's hard for children to grasp exactly what it means.
But they'll find out the hard way from somebody else.
Yes, they could find out from somebody else, and that was why in the 50s I understand from my parents it was a requirement that they were told they had to let me know as soon as possible, and I think that's typically the way it's done even now. But there is this movement, kind of this retro movement, not to tell people at all.
Do you have siblings then?
Yes.
And
yes.
They're adoptive too?
No.
What happened? Is there something different, like if you have more than one adoptive and the siblings, and I'm the special child, but they're a special child? Or I mean, what are the dynamics between the siblings, and if is it different if all of them are adoptive or whatever? Do you mean?
I imagine this really has to do with what goes on from family to family, and I perceive there are probably some adoptive parents in the room who might have more than one adoptive child and might be able to address that issue a little bit more. My perception on that would be that it might be easier for children who are in families where there are a lot of children who are adopted. I don't really know. That's not my experience, and I haven't really read in the literature enough about that to make a generalization.
I shared with my group that one reason why I stayed, to listen, was because I have my very best friend who's adopted, and listen to her dynamics. She has a sister who was adopted, but it seems like that part of the dynamics was the parents won't let her find out. That mean they are not the father who is still alive, the adoptive father who's still alive, is not. He will not agree to give her information to help her find out. But part of the dynamics was, I think my friend, who dislikes her younger sister intensely, part of it was this girl, and she, her anger about being adoptive, she didn't always behave as well as the other one. And part of it is the gratitude. I should be grateful I got adopted. You should be grateful you got adopted. And so I just wondered if other people had that kind of dynamics.
Yeah.
Just a question about your comment on the concept of being chosen. How did that affect relationship with your siblings? It seemed like the concept of joining or the community, that sometimes when you isolate out the concept of specialness, that it does affect that.
And in talking to my sisters about that, I have found out that it raised a lot of resentment in them. That they were really resentful of the fact that I was adopted. Yeah. And which leads me to answer number two, to who am I? And I think the other answer that adoptees would give is, I am different. And it's kind of tied into I am special, but it has maybe a little negative edge on it. I am different. And it has to do with your question as well. I think of course, every family has its own problems and its own mythologies and its own dysfunctions. And my family was just like every other family in that way. And I really detached myself from a lot of the family struggles as a child by telling myself that these aren't my parents. I'm not like them. I'm different. Also, my personality type was just very different from the others in my family, and I tend, I'll put it this way, I have an explosive family, just explosive. These people are extremely effusive. When they get mad, they blow. I mean, it's volcanic. And I reacted just the opposite to that. I was, in fact, my sisters used to call me the Ice Maiden because I just shut down. I mean, I don't get angry. I keep it all inside. And and having met my birth mother and birth father, I can see exactly. I mean, they react to life in the same way. they're much, much more introverted people. But I remember my sister saying to me, well, you know, we wish that we were adopted too. So that, you know, when fights would happen or something, that they thought it was unfair that they, you know, that they had to come from this family and I didn't have to come from that family. So that's one aspect to being different, I think, and to being special as well. I think so. Yeah, go ahead.
Heidi, I think one of the things that I'm interested in, I know several of the rest of here, we are adoptive parents. How did you feel when you met your birth parent? Your birth mother. How did you feel about your adoptive parents? How did that impact your feelings for your adoptive parents?
I don't think it really affected my feelings about my adoptive family at all. I don't think it has changed my relationship with them. In fact, I would even say I've even maybe gotten closer to my adoptive family. But you also have to consider that I did my search really quite late. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was into my 30s mm-hmm. when I researched. So I was already independent from my family and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But it did cause. I think I'm closer to my family now. But that it may have a lot to do with some other things, not just the adoption search.
Did you achieve when you finally met your biological parents? Whatever you wanted, did you achieve that?
What I was looking for, I found. if that's an answer to your question, and I will probably talk a little bit more about my story tomorrow or Wednesday. If you want to catch me, if you're not going to be there Wednesday and you desperately want to know my story, read the book, or catch me at dinner or something like that. But I will be talking more about that in future sessions. But you had
I was just going to ask you if it was a good relationship when you found your birth mother, and if you would do it again, or if you would recommend it, or any percentages that are known or anything like that.
Yeah, well, again, this is something I want to touch on more in when we talk about birth parents, but I think it's people who search and find their birth parents tend to find that they're just normal people like everybody else, and the stories about, you know, being the product of rape or incest, or, I mean, kind of the fears that a lot of adoptees have about what they're going to find out there generally do not transpire. But there's really so little research about this, and maybe it could also be skewed. You know, maybe the people that write about their reunion experiences are the people who have positive experiences.
Sure,
you
know,
you just can't really tell. But I have talked with many, many adoptees at this point. I mean, it's kind of my own personal survey. And everybody that I have talked to but one has had a really positive experience as a result of that. And Betty Lifton in her book talks about a one woman, in fact, who found her mother was in a mental hospital and was institutionalized. Interesting story. That's a beautiful and really wonderful story. This woman said, even having found her in the mental hospital, I felt a sense of reunion, and that this woman who, I can't remember what her affliction was, but she was not able to attend to things, and she was very violent. And when her daughter came in and met her, she was still for 30 minutes and sat in the room with her, and folk was able to focus on her, even though it wasn't clear that they were really communicating. But there was a difference, and I'll tell this story now too. I met an adoptive family who had a child who had a severe retardation problem that developed later on. I think when she was 6 or 7, and it was diagnosed as a very rare genetic disease. So they wanted to find her birth mother to find out about that, and they were able to locate her. By the time they found the birth mother, the child's IQ had dropped to that of a 6-month-old, and she's basically, she'll be this way the rest of her life. But they asked the birth mother if she wanted to meet their daughter. And it's the same kind of story like the one I just told. This child, who I believe at the time was 10 or 11, but had the IQ of a 6-month-old, also was very, very distracted, and when the adoptive mother told me that when this reunion took place in a hotel room, she said that my daughter, every time her birth mother talked, she turned her head and would follow her. She can't see very well, the daughter can't see very well, but she was able to somehow connect with the voice of her birth mother. And I think that there's something to that, because the child maybe had heard her mother's voice, you know, for that period of time. But it was the auditory connection. She really couldn't see her, but she followed her her voice throughout the room, which she normally was not able to do with other strangers. So that's kind of an interesting story. I think you had your hand.
Well, just we met with an adoptee a couple months ago who had a reunion experience that you wouldn't have called positive. In fact, in the end, it fractured the relationship with her birth mother. Mm. But the positiveness for her was that it helped her recognize that something that she'd been looking for all of her life and expecting she would receive from her birth mother, she knew she could only get from God, and it turned her toward God for the first time in her life. It was incredibly, she had an incredibly positive experience, even though it looks like a bad story. It was a great story. So it doesn't have to look good to be a positive experience.
Oh, and I don't think the spiritual aspect of this can be dismissed, because for me this has been a very spiritual thing as well. Well, and for me also, because I was placed through a Catholic agency, and one of the really neat experiences I had with my birth mother, one of the times that we really bonded, was going to Palm Sunday Mass together, and she looked at me and there were tears in her eyes, and she said, "It is such a pleasure to be here at Mass with you." So I really do think of it very much as a kind of religious connection, a spiritual connection as well. Yeah. I wanted to. I love using fairy tales, and Bruno Bettelheim, I don't know how many of you have read the book Uses of Enchantment, but it's a really lovely book, and he mentioned something about all children have to go through this experience of reconciling the wicked witch with the fairy godmother. And I'm using the female terms, and I don't mean to, you know, make the mothers feel like you're a wicked witch, but that's the way the fairy tales go. I suppose there are ogres and magicians or something too. But what he says is that adopted children never really figure out that wicked witch and fairy godmother are united, because for them, when mama is bad, she is the wicked witch, and there's this fairy godmother out there somewhere who will come and rescue her at some point. And I think that is also an experience that maybe some adopted parents will recognize, that the adopted child will come out and say, "Well, you're not my real mother," and it's not something that gets integrated as well as with biological children sometimes. There's something about good adoptees and bad adoptees, and I think many of you will have stories of people you know who have good adoptees, children that have behaved themselves and who have been grateful. I heard someone use that word, and I think that's, for me, I was the grateful adoptee, and I think that's why it took me to age 30 to decide that it was okay to search. Because I felt, what is she to me? You know, she abandoned me, and these parents took me in, and they have treated me so well, and I have this wonderful family, and she means nothing to me, and I was the good adoptee. That I as a teacher, as a high school teacher, I came across many, many bad adoptees, and their parents were always happy to tell me in conference, "Well, you know, it's because he's adopted." And I said, I taught in boarding school, and it was so true that many of the children who acted out came to me and said, "It's because I'm adopted." And then I would have to tell them, of course, that I was adopted too, and that was no excuse. But there is the rebelliousness, I think, comes with this also. "You're not my parents. I don't have to listen to you," kind of thing. And I think that is there as well. Just one other thing I wanted to mention. I think a lot of adoptive children are are unusually creative, and I don't really know if that's part of their experience of integrating so many things. I'd like to posit something about that. I think that part of being adopted, you learn to tell stories because there's so many holes in your past that you can't quite fill in. That you become a very good storyteller. Some people might call it lying. I think I was a chronic liar as a child too. But it was a way of avoiding difficult questions. I have sisters that are blonde and redhead respectively, and when the three of us would go places together, people would always say, "Well, now, you don't look anything alike." And I wasn't that I was ashamed of being adopted at all. I was special, right? I mean, I love to tell people, well, I'm adopted. But I rapidly picked up signals from other adults that wasn't okay to say. You know, people felt uncomfortable about that. I wasn't sure why, but I could tell that they were uncomfortable. So I started to make up stories about why I looked the way I looked. I mean, and the stories became fantastical. I mean, it must have been fun for people to listen to me. one of my favorite stories was that my grandmother was brunette, and that my mother hadn't been brunette because her husband, who had been divorced, looked this way. I mean, I don't even know how I got, and it was like irrelevant that I would get into a whole divorce, and there's no divorce in the family. I just made up the stories. I don't know how many of you have read Alice Walker's book, Drama of the Gifted Child. She doesn't talk about adoptees, but if you're raising adopted children, I think that book is lovely, and I think picks up on a lot of the kind of dynamics of raising an adoptee. Just the last section that I wanted to talk about, and I don't think there's going to be time, so I will pick up it on Wednesday, is the I am disembodied. And for me, this is like the big answer to the question about who am I as an adoptee, because I had no physical connection to anyone. And that's why I point out up here that it doesn't surprise me that non-adoptees don't mention the fact that they look like someone. But for an adoptee, I think that's a big part of it. And I will pick up with that on Wednesday. I also want to thank you all for sharing your stories. And if there are questions that you have or issues that you'd like me to address in future sessions, please approach me about that, because I'd love to gear this as much to your interests as possible. And please come and tell me your stories, because I collect those like pearls. I love to share stories with people. So thank you very much.